Okay, good morning. We are starting this, I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Committee on Children and Families Finance and Policy. Welcome to all. I'm so glad that we're in this room, though I think that some folks may have gotten confused that we're in our original room. But it does have the advantage that we've got, there is quite a gap here, Lee Daniels. I should note for folks that there are several other committees meeting, a lot going on, so I know the members are making their way in. But one advantage of this room is that we can have virtual testimony. We have folks from around the state who I know are joining us. We will be adopting minutes a little bit later when we have a quorum. I want to note, we have 31 people signed up to testify. There's a lot going on with this bill. I'm happy about that. We have got to be out of here by 10 a.m. So what that means is that we're going to have to be very strict about a two-minute time limit for folks speaking, and I'm going to be having to cut folks off to enforce that, and I'm sorry to have to do that, but please, if you're going to be speaking, keep yourself to 2 minutes, and when the alarm rings, if you can please wrap up in the following couple of seconds after that, just to make sure we fit people in. We're going to, so first I should, the chair, I'm going to ask Representative Hicks, if you would, move House File 238 as amended to bring that before us.
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. So that bill is before us, and so now we're going to take public testimony on the bill. Good point. I guess we don't have a quorum, do we? So we can't even do that. I'm so sorry. Well, Representative Hicks, I'm sorry to put you in that because we don't have a quorum. So we'll simply receive testimony. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Withers. I appreciate that. So we're going to start with the commissioners of Human Services and Education. And so I'll maybe start with Commissioner Harpstead then and Commissioner Jetfield. To be ready. So with that, we're going to start. And commissioners, I'm going to ask you to model the 2 minutes yourselves. I'm so sorry to put you in that position. Model good behavior for everybody else. And with that, I will start with the Commissioner of Human Services and welcome back to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Jody Harpstead, the Commissioner of the Department of Human Services, and really delighted to be here this morning. I just returned from a national conference of the Administration for Children and Families in Washington, the federal agency who funds a great deal of our children and families' work in Minnesota. I was asked to be on a panel to discuss DHS's work to build an anti-racist human services system and to compare notes with other state leaders on what we are all doing to help every child and family thrive and participate in community. I mainly want to say thank you today. We are deeply grateful for the focus of this committee on strengthening and supporting Minnesota's families and children, and deeply grateful to the governor's office and legislative leadership for deciding to invest so much in this space. Historic investments in child care, let's get that done this year. CCAP to 75th percentile, reprioritizing basic sliding fees, supporting the child care industry to support the other sectors of the economy. Administrative improvements for child care providers. Once again, the workforce that allows thousands and thousands of other Minnesotans to offer their talents in an historic workforce shortage. So many other great supports for families to make Minnesota the best place for all children to grow up. Funding to support the Family First Prevention Services Act, Phase 3. Support for child protection with a focus on supporting tribes and Native children. MFIP 6-month budgeting and other important reforms. Funding to people experiencing homelessness to instead experiencing housing justice. Food security for Minnesota families. Again, supports that allow thousands and thousands of Minnesotans to contribute to our economy in an historic workforce shortage. And the crown jewel, support to develop the creation of a Department of Children, Youth, and Families to combine the efforts of so many state agencies and a focus on our families, our children, and our youth. IT investments to support children and family services because you can't split what you don't have. Support for DHS licensing to catch up on the ongoing needs to get providers licensed and to steadily monitor for fraud, abuse, and error, which I believe has kept DHS-funded organizations from perpetrating the fraud we saw last year in feeding our future.
And we are at 2 minutes.
Again, thank you so much for your compassion for and commitment to strong families and giving every Minnesota child and youth the opportunity to thrive, to grow up strong, and to contribute their talents to the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Harpstead. You are a consummate leader in time management and in many, many other ways. And we thank you for setting a good example and for all of your work and your leadership. Thank you. Commissioner Jett, you are up next, sir.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Willie Jett, and I've had the pleasure to serve as the Commissioner of Education since the beginning of the year. I appreciate being able to be back with you today for the opportunity to testify on this omnibus bill and for your work on behalf of Minnesota's children and families. My comments today will be focused on Article 7 and 9. We are grateful to see several of the governor's budget policy proposals related to early education in the bill and thank the committee for including those provisions. These changes will have a positive impact on our youngest learners. Ensuring access for all children is central to creating a better and more equitable education system. And there are straightforward policy changes we can make. Access to high-quality early learning opportunities means making meaningful investments. This is why the governor and lieutenant governors proposed a robust mixed delivery model for four-year-olds that would provide access to early learning opportunities for nearly 30,000 children through school-based Head Start and licensed center and family child care. On the children and family side, we support an increased investment in early learning scholarships and want to make sure that we expand access for all our children. This is not a time that we can go backwards in providing access to children and families. Schools and families alike will be supported by an increase in developmental screening, A2. These screenings done in schools help to identify where students could benefit from early intervention supports to stay on track with their learning. Finally, I want to thank you for including the next steps in the creation of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families in this bill. And thank you again for allowing me this opportunity to testify. I'm grateful to see several of the governor and lieutenant governor's budget and policy proposals related to early childhood education included, along with other important investments.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Appreciate it. Thank you. And thanks for your leadership as well. I'm going to ask Andrew Verdon and Amy Wallstein to make their way to the front. And Leanne Littlewolf, I'm hoping that we can bring you in online. I'm not sure. And we're going to go back and forth between online and in person. If you're not quite ready, maybe Mr. Verdon, I'm going to ask you to start if you can. And then we're going to go to Leanne Littlewolf after you. So, Mr. Verdon, please identify yourself and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andrew Verdon. I'm a public political affairs coordinator with MAPE, the state employee union representing more than 15,000 hardworking individuals in Minnesota state government. Thank you for the opportunity today to speak regarding the proposed Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I want to start by thanking Assistant Commissioner Aaron Bailey and Deputy Commissioner Aaron Campbell from MMB for working with us and other labor groups on concerns from members around the transfer of employees. While the language in these employee protection clause addresses these issues, we continue to work with MMB on remaining concerns related to the transfer of temporary and classified workers and on potential waivers necessary for federal funding streams associated with specific job positions. We appreciate MMB's commitment to work with us through these remaining issues before the final passage of this bill. We'd also like to thank the governor for increasing the funding request to ensure that IT costs and data sharing can occur. Our members appreciate being included in the ongoing process and having their work valued. We expect that this collaboration will continue to increase as this moves from legislation to reality. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the testimony, for your work. And then Paul Verrett's going to be after Amy Wallstein. And so, Ms. Wallstein, once you settle in, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amy Wallstein. I'm the Senior Policy Director at the Minnesota Business Partnership, an association representing over 100 senior business leaders, all united by a common goal of eliminating education disparities and preparing all Minnesotans for future success. I want to thank the chair and the committee for the robust investment in the Early Learning Scholarship Program. This program has proven successful in Minnesota in helping low-income children access high-quality learning environments. We think this is a significant and historic investment, and we appreciate the robust investment in this biennium as well as the increase in the out biennium. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And after Paul Verrett will be Commissioner Trista Mattis Castillo, so you can make your way to the front. And Mr. Verrett, once you get a chance to settle in, please identify yourself.
Sure. Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, members of the committee, my name is Paul Verrett, and I am the Director of Advancement and Community Engagement for Agate Housing and Services. Agate's mission is to end homelessness and relieve hunger through action and advocacy. We are very happy to see the elements of the Pathways Home Act in this omnibus bill, particularly the emergency shelter capital funds. We are the product of the merger of St. Stephen's Human Services and House of Charity. We've been providing shelter, food, and other emergency services for 70 years when we started on Nicollet Island, and then also when St. Stephen's opened their first shelter in 1981. We also established a groundbreaking street outreach team in 2007 with the partnership of People with Lived Experience. We've seen many hard winters, and like others today, here today, we have mourned the deaths of people who died without a place, safe place to sleep. We have seen so many successes and also lives saved by shelter. During the pandemic with 24/7 shelter, we were actually able to increase our exits to housing by 10%. I want to be very clear. This issue is very urgent and always has been. We are guided now by people with lived experience and ready to provide the shelter and services they need in ways that they asked for clearly. We're very encouraged to see emergency shelter and capital services in this bill, but we're all on very, very tight timelines. Just this week, people were turned away from our current shelter because we were full. Our shelter has been full for a very long time. We and the other outreach teams have been working very hard in more and more encampments. Our outreach workers have spoken with many people who have lost faith in the shelter system and have chosen to sleep outside because of this. Frankly, we are done telling people our shelters are full, and we're done hoping that people make it through one more night waiting for a safe bed. So we are very grateful for the legislature's hard work and urge the expeditious passage of shelter capital and emergency services funds. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to ask Commissioner Matos Castillo to make the way to the front. And then, so we'll have Randy Elise Routh after. And then after that, Commissioner Ruckman-Brecky will be up after that. So Commissioner Matos Castillo, welcome. Please identify yourself and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Trista Matos Castillo, Chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. And I'm here to congratulate you and thank you for investing in families and to ensure that counties have a voice at the table in the new Department of Children and Youth and Families. We're especially encouraged by the investment in shelter and Pathways Home. This is incredibly important and the number one issue in Ramsey County to address the needs of our unsheltered residents. I want to also encourage the concern that we have in Ramsey County is that there isn't an investment directly to Ramsey County. And want to share that Ramsey County has already invested since the start of the pandemic $69 million to change the model of addressing homelessness for families and individuals who are unsheltered. This is a critical need. We were able to adjust the model so that our success rate went from 3% to 66% to permanent supportive housing and success rates for our families in our community. Without this, we are facing a historic loss, and we will go backwards in time with a model that's proven to work and success, and families will return to the streets, which is unfortunate. Ramsey County went upstream and invested another $86 million to build more affordable housing so that this really is a bubble that we're looking for funding over 5 years, $14.5 million for funding. So we would encourage a second look, maybe a second bite at the apple to think about what we can do to address the need in our community. We, of the population that we're serving that are facing homelessness, only 42% identify that they're from Ramsey County. They come from the entire state of Minnesota. And we made the conscious decision to serve our residents where they're at, as opposed to turning folks away in this model. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Thanks for all of your work and your leadership. We're glad to have you here. I'm Randy Elise Routh. You're up next, and then Commissioner Ruckman-Brecky will be after that. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Randy Routh, Director of Interfaith Action of Greater St. Paul. Project Home, part of the Ramsey County Continuum of Care, is the largest shelter for family with children in Ramsey County. Most of our guests are children. The fate of Project Home is tied to House File 1686. Funding for that bill is not included in this bill. Before COVID, Project Home had 40 mobile beds. People slept on church basement floors. Nothing felt stable. In COVID, Project Home relocated to Provincial House, the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet's former convent, a place, a neighborhood where you'd want your kids to grow up. The families have rooms with doors that lock, and we help families find housing, jobs, transportation, childcare, and more. The success statistics are stunning. We move from 40 beds to 100. We serve more than 200 families a year. Our average length of stay has decreased from 83 to 64 days. And at 6 months in housing, 96% of the families say the new arrangement is working. They've achieved stability and economic mobility. If House File 1686 is not funded, Project Home will likely be wiped out. We will lose the family success that is so key to the fabric of our community, and families will be on the streets and kids will be missing school. We urge you to please find funding for House File 1686 to keep Project Home in our community along with the entire Ramsey County continuum of care.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for your work. After Commissioner Weckman-Brecky, we're going to start moving to the folks online. So Leanne Littlewolf, you'll be the first person after the commissioner. So please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Barb Weckman-Brecky. I'm a county commissioner in Scott County. Today, I'm representing the Association of Minnesota Counties, speaking in support for the provisions in House File 2910 that dedicate funding for community resource centers, CRCs. CRCs is an umbrella term we're using for a variety of community-based family-strengthening models that include family resource centers, community-based schools, and hubs. Sincere thanks for your attention and support of CRCs. Scott County, with short-term support from private partners, has implemented 3 family resource centers. The funding in this proposal will continue to sustain that work, which we are already seeing have impact, and allow it to grow and develop around the state. You might ask, what do our family resource centers do? Let me give you 2 recent examples. A working single dad came into our family resource center. He had just separated from his wife, and he has a son with significant disabilities. He was homeless and planning to sleep in his car. He was worried about losing his employment due to not having care for his son during his parenting time. At our family resource center, he was connected to resources and to a parent support outreach program, which ultimately helped him secure housing and connect to services for his son so that he can continue to be employed. Next story, a single pregnant mother with a preschooler came into our family resource center. She was worried about eviction as she did not have a way to continue to pay rent when she gave birth and couldn't immediately return to work. Our family resource center folks connected this new mom to a crib and baby supplies and provided housing assistance. She was awarded a child care scholarship so that she can continue to work after the baby is born. In both instances, child protection was prevented from needing to be involved. All of us want that to happen. And so, in closing, on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, I encourage your support of the CRC proposal and the funding in House File 2910.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Commissioner, for your work. Apologies for some of the technical challenges that we're having with all this, but we're getting there. We're going to go online to Leanne Littlewolf, and then after that, the person in the room here will be Lorna Schmidt. Leanne Littlewolf, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony from virtually.
Oh, good morning. My name is Leanne Littlewolf. I use she, her pronouns. Indisogijik indigo ga zagaswa jimekag na unjiba and ma'inga indu dame. And I'm the executive director for ACO, the American Indian Community Housing Organization in Duluth, Minnesota. I'm here to speak on for the need for shelter capital funding. Right now, ACO, we're a nonprofit, and we have a domestic violence shelter called Dabanuagan that we've operated since the 1990s. We have 10 beds, and we usually serve 160 to 180 individuals per year, and we usually have over 500 turnaways because we're full.
Can I ask you, Ms. Little, to lean in a little more to whatever microphone you're using? Just try to make sure it's as close to your mouth as you can. We're just having a bit of trouble hearing you.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
It is better.
Okay. So Dabanuagan serves, we have 10 beds, and we are in the process of doing a shelter renovation where we will now have 24 beds. Dabanuagan is the only culturally specific shelter in northeastern Minnesota, and we have a high need. Last winter, the winter of 2021 to 2022, in Duluth, we have a warming shelter, and that's for our community members who are unsheltered and not staying in emergency shelter. Of those 554 individuals, 47% identify as BIPOC, 27% of that 47 identify as Native, and another 37% of that 47 identify as Native and another race. So we have a high number of people of color in our community who are unsheltered, and it's disproportionate to our population. So it's a high need, and we also have a desperate need for family shelters. We have families that are going to Wisconsin to seek shelter because we don't have any access here. And so I really ask for your support for the shelter capital funding. And I just want to say thank you, Miigwech, for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. We have Lerner Schmidt here, and then after that, Lori York, we're going to go to you online. Ms. Schmidt, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Lorna Schmidt, and I'm the Director of Public Policy and Advocacy with Catholic Charities Twin Cities. I'm here today to say thank you for your commitment to addressing our homelessness crisis and for supporting historic investments in emergency shelter. And we want to especially thank Vice Chair Keeler, Representative Gomez, and others for the leadership that they've brought to this work. Our emergency shelter system is a safety net for those most in need in our community. But lack of public investment for decades means our net is filled with holes and loose threads. Your proposed investments in the Emergency Services Program, the Homeless Youth Act, and Shelter Capital will help us provide a more supportive landing for those who may otherwise fall through the cracks. These funding requests aren't new. Advocates, partners, and bipartisan legislators from across the state have been calling for this funding for years as we struggle to respond to the state's homelessness crisis. So we are immensely grateful to see them included today. What is new, however, are the increased demands we see for shelter services, driven in part by the pandemic, the more frequent and challenging cases of substance use and mental illness among those we serve, rising rates of homelessness among older adults, and higher operating costs. These investments will go a long way to help stabilize shelter operations for those in need across Minnesota. It could help prevent the closure of some life-saving shelter programs, but we know the needs are far greater. As you move forward, we hope you will continue to work with partners and advocates to identify ways to build upon these investments. The pandemic brought lessons learned, innovative pilot projects, and new partnerships that, if continued, could help build a more robust safety net with more of the wraparound services needed to ensure people don't become permanently caught up in it. We thank you for your support and look forward to working with you to keep moving these investments forward this session.
Thank you so much. After Lori York, we're going to have James Lewis in the room here, if you make your way to the front. Lori York, you are up online.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Lori York, and I'm the Executive Director for White Earth Nation. I'm here today to provide testimony on House File 238. White Earth brought forward recommendations to Minnesota DHS that did not make it into the DHS package, and without additions or amendments, our families will continue to face disproportionalities and tribes will face inequities. In House File 238, beginning in Section 218.30, the Initiative Tribes Mille Lacs, Section 219.5 Leech Lake, and Section 219.11 Red Lake are identified as Initiative Tribes and that are included in receiving increases for the Indian Child Welfare Initiatives. White Earth Initiative was not included. On October 17, 2022, the initial amount of $832,173 was requested for salary and wages and did not include the out-of-home placement costs. That was corrected in a second email dated October 18, 2022, requesting $4,607,631 by White Earth to the Minnesota Department of Human Services to be added to the base rate. In addition, we had made specific requests for QRTP and QI language for tribal inclusion as well, but that didn't make it into the proposal. By excluding tribal needs, we create financial hardships for tribes paying the cost of mental health placements and counties paying for tribal court-ordered placements. We have emphasized the barriers we faced as tribes in obtaining culturally competent QIs or getting our own Indigenous providers through the process of becoming QIs. We have identified solutions and recommendations that we would be happy to share with you. One policy issue related to FFPSA we feel needs to be addressed is the decision to require all families to have open CP cases before being eligible for FFPSA prevention services, even though the federal instruction clearly does not require that. Kinship Navigator Program also needs to include tribes and ways, tribal recommendations and consultation sessions, but that didn't make it into the proposal, and we could provide written recommendations for that. White Earth is respectfully requesting that White Earth be identified as an initiative tribe with the increased amount proposed of $4,607,631. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. York. Thank you for your testimony. After James Lewis, we're going to be going to Commissioner Conley from Hennepin County online. But Mr. Lewis, please begin.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is James Lewis. I currently serve as Housing and Services Division Director with The Link in North Minneapolis. I'm here today to talk about why an increase to the Homeless Youth Act is so important. Youth homelessness is a very real crisis in our state. On any given night, there are over 4,800 unaccompanied youth experiencing homelessness. There is a huge gap in the needed response for these youth. Minnesota only has 312 emergency shelter beds designated for youth. The Link and other youth service network providers see young people every day who are sleeping in entryways of buildings, trading sex for a place to sleep, sleeping in their cars, in encampments, and many other unsafe situations. We are also seeing an increase in the severity of mental health issues, trauma, domestic violence, impacts of gun violence. I have a couple examples to share for you. A 16-year-old who got into a fight with his brother, who was then outed in front of their mom. The mother then started beating him and tried to run him over with her car as he ran away. Fortunately, he was able to get away and ended up at The Link in our culturally specific housing program for LGBTQ+ youth. We also saw a landlord evict a young black mother and her baby after her baby's father was gunned down in front of their apartment building. She didn't have any family or friends that could help with moving costs and ended up experiencing homelessness. Happy to report that this young person is now in our Young Families program. We have the opportunity in our state to end and reduce youth homelessness. The Homeless Youth Act is the way to do it. We know it works. The last time we received an increase in the Homeless Youth Act, we saw a decrease statewide during the same time by 1,100 youth per night. By reducing and ending youth homelessness, we are also preventing adult homelessness. Wilder Research Center shows that little over 52% of adults experiencing homelessness had first experienced homelessness as a youth.
And I'll need to have you wrap up, I'm sorry to say.
We can end state youth homelessness. We have the data we need. We know what needs to be done. We have the dedicated service providers, and most importantly, the incredible young people that are waiting to do the right thing. Please invest in Homeless Youth Act and help us end youth homelessness in Minnesota.
Thanks for your testimony. After Commissioner Conley, we're going to be going to Lily Exum, hope I'm saying your name correctly, in the room here. Commissioner Conley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Angela Conley. I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner and certainly grateful for your commitment to public service and for the needed investments made in childcare and for some of our lowest income families. The permanent reprioritization of the basic sliding fee wait list will allow counties like Hennepin to continue serving more families who absolutely need childcare assistance. And serving all families through MFIP instead of DWP will better support families while also reducing the administrative burden on county staff. However, with only 2 minutes, I gotta focus my remarks on what the board sees as the most important legislative issue this session, and that's ending unsheltered homelessness and increasing housing stability for families in Hennepin County and across the state of Minnesota. Since the end of the statewide emergency rental assistance program and the eviction moratorium, the number of families entering shelter has outpaced the number of families exiting shelter by a ratio of 2 to 1. And consequently, there are 250 plus families and more than 500 children in shelter today, right now. That's 300 more children in shelter than this time last year. And just last week, the Hennepin County Board had to approve an additional $17 million in local funds to support these operations in 2023 and to meet our Shelter All commitment to our families. And I cannot stress this enough, the urgency of this moment or the need for state partnership in this work. The Hennepin County Board committed $91 million in federal COVID relief funds towards homelessness services and affordable housing development that prioritizes our lowest income households. And our investments carry through to the end of the federal stimulus period, but face a financial cliff in 2024. And such a backward step will increase unsheltered homelessness and the associated risks that come with it. So to wrap up, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. We look forward to working with legislators to meet our shared goal of ending unsheltered homelessness and ensuring that every single Minnesotan has a safe and affordable place to call home. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for your testimony. After Lily Exum in the room here, we're going to be going to Francis Davis online. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify. My name is Lily, and I use all pronouns. I work at the Link as a youth specialist, and I am also a past program participant. When I was younger, I experienced homelessness on and off. It was hard to find shelter or housing at, due to my age and location at the time, also my gender identity. Shortly after I turned 18, I experienced having to go to jail and treatment. Sobriety was hard to achieve without stable housing or support. It was a way of survival at that point. I finally was referred to the Link Sober Living apartment, and that helped me get back on track. My girlfriend was also dealing with homelessness at the time, and she was pregnant. She was sleeping in her car before the Link allowed her to move into our program. After our son was born, they helped us move into a two-bedroom. We were able to get employed and go to school and obtain our degrees. During that time, the Link's family program gave us resources for our son and continued support for our family. I'm now married and working a full-time job at the Link. I was able to go to school and get my bachelor's degree with honors in social work. The Link is helping other youth access resources that just like they help me. I believe it is important to continue to invest more funds and effort into the Homeless Youth Act because the programs it supports and the impact it has on youth is huge. We need to continue to support young people and to have equitable access to shelter, housing, and housing because our youth determine our future, and without a home, there is no foundation to grow. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony and congratulations on all you've achieved and are continuing to. After Francis Davis online, we're going to be having Peter Wojtok. Please make your way to the front. Francis Davis, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, my name is Francis Davis, and I work at Plymouth Academy Child Care Center in Minneapolis, and I have been working in child care since 97. We know exactly what child care needs to be affordable, accessible, and a high-quality, family-sustainable career for our teachers. And we know that this budget does not have enough money to meet all those needs, but it's a good start. The budget will help child care providers stay in operation. There is not a shortage of child care slots, but rather a shortage of teachers. We have our waiting list, we have space, but we don't have the teachers because we don't have the resources to pay them what they deserve. My grandson just started, he's 14 years old, and he just started a job at Jimmy John's. He makes $13 an hour with no experience. And we have child care teachers' aides here in the center that we can barely afford to pay a little more than what he makes. We can't compete with Target or Walmart because we can't pay them enough. Raising the child care assistance program reimbursement rate will allow us to increase the pay rate so we can help keep quality teachers. It will allow us to maintain high quality environment for our kids. We'll have the financial resources to we need to do so. During the pandemic, the Child Care Stabilization Grant literally saved us. Without the funding for retention payments, child care centers will be forced to raise rates for parents, which results in being priced out of child care. Child care is expensive to provide, just like public school is hard to provide. K-12 education is expensive to provide. As a society, we fund K-12 education, but not child care and early learning.
I need to have you wrap up, I'm afraid.
Okay. This is the most important years to invest. So we just ask that you would just please fully fund child care.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony. Moving to, actually, before I move to the next testifier, I just want to note that among our technical difficulties this morning is that apparently there was a PC failure on one of the channels that was broadcasting the hearing. So for those who are watching, just know that there will be a full and complete archive of the hearing that is going to be posted later today. There may be some audio-only portions, is what the staff is telling me. And so if somebody's watching online, just be aware that that will be available later today, and we're glad to have you now if you were not with us earlier. Mr. Wojtak, we'll have you start in just a second. But Cecil Keller, you're going to be the next person up online after this testifier. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Peter Wojtak, Government Relations with Hunger Solutions Minnesota. And we want to thank the committee for addressing the needs of hunger in this bill, and to Representative Keeler for your leadership on this issue, specifically for including additional funding support for tribal food sovereignty, for increasing the base funding to the Minnesota Food Shelf Program and one-time capital dollars to improve and expand emergency food distribution facilities. This funding comes at a really vital time for many food shelves across the state, where we've seen visits increase significantly from this last year and causing so much strain across the food shelves across the state at a time when food prices also remain at an all-time high. So this investment really in the emergency food system will make an immediate impact and a long-term impact to the food shelves across the state, so we can continue to ensure they're able to keep their shelves stocked despite the rising food costs. They're able to transport and deliver food to those who need it, including the growing number of seniors who depend on that service, and ensure that food shelves are set up with the proper and appropriate storage, equipment, and infrastructure to meet the growing demand. So on behalf of the over 300 food shelves across the state, we thank you so much for your support.
Thank you for your testimony and for your work. After Cecil Keller online, we're going to have Robin Manthe in the room here. Cecil Keller, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Cecil Keller, and I am the Senior Vice President of Early Childhood Programs at Think Small. We came into the session with high hopes that 2023 would be a year of transformational change for young children and their families, and we stressed the fact that the path to that change needed to travel first through the estimated 31,000 low-income children under the age of 5 lacking access to quality early care and learning. To that end, we appreciate the inclusion of items in Article 7 that are focused on moving us to a very different future. These infrastructure investments, including establishing the Great Start Scholarship Program, creating the new department, IT infrastructure, and moving to a default one-star rating for licensed childcare programs. We also appreciate the inclusion of funding for CCAP and the One-Stop Assistance Network. We do share concerns raised by others about the low amount of funding for the retention payments. Finally, and most importantly, we are really excited to work with Representative Coulter on House File 1277, and are very appreciative of the investments this budget makes in early learning scholarships and the policy to move that program forward, including raising per-child scholarship amounts and adding additional priority categories. That said, I'm sure we can all agree that the drop in funding in the TALES will negatively impact children in ways that none of us want to see. I struggle with whether to include this last part because we are so incredibly appreciative of the contributions that Chair Pinto and other members of this committee have made and your dedication and engagement in this issue. We know how hard you all work to secure a target that would meet the full need of our youngest children. So while I do not want to diminish the incredible amount of good this investment will do, our mission compels me to highlight that of those 31,000 low-income children lacking access to quality care and early learning, the current investments or the proposed investments being made in scholarships and CCAP in this committee and in pre-K in the education finance will only cover about 50% of the need in the next biennium and 40% in the following. There's still much to do. We applaud the committee's leadership and look forward to continuing to work together to make investments proposed in this bill a reality and get Minnesota's children, especially those furthest from opportunity, off to the greatest start possible. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The next person on deck after this one is going to be Kimberly Johnson online. But first, please identify yourself and proceed. Robin Manthe.
Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Robin Manthe, and I'm the Managing Director of Kitchen Coalition at Second Harvest Heartland. We're one of the nation's largest food banks, serving over 59 counties in our service area. And we're also the operators of Kitchen Coalition, a prepared meals program that provides nutritionally balanced, culturally affirming meals. We were born out of the pandemic and now a permanent part of the food bank, working with 16 restaurants and caterers, over 50% of them BIPOC-owned, who turn donated and locally sourced meals ingredients into freshly prepared meals. We appreciate this legislature's work to advance policies that support Minnesotans facing food insecurity, such as universal school meals, the emergency food shelf relief, and are very supportive of the several proposals taken by the governor's food security budget that have made it into your omnibus bill. But we believe that these proposals still leave gaps in service available to food insecure Minnesotans, and taken alone, they're not enough to fight hunger in Minnesota, which remains at a record high due to the ongoing consequences of the pandemic, elevated grocery costs, and the sunsetting of federal benefits. Our research shows that 15% of those who are food insecure don't have the home, health, or ability to cook for themselves. And even with existing meals, many are not getting the prepared, or existing programs, many are not getting the prepared meals they need. Our funding request to this committee would help ensure the continued growth of prepared meals programs in Minnesota, building on the successful distribution of American Rescue Plan funds to support this work over the last year. These meals help people moving forward. Similar to many of the unhoused discussions you've had today, we support youth who are no longer in school qualifying for school meals to have a meal and a place at a place where they're trusted. We support women like Nancy, a single mother at the Jeremiah program in Rochester, to sit down for a meal with her kids and have connection as she disrupts the cycle of poverty two generations at a time.
We hope you'll reconsider,
and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. The next person in the room is going to be Claire Sanford, but first, Kimberly Johnson online. Please proceed.
Chair and members, my name is Kimberly Johnson. I'm the financial services manager in Wright County.
Can I ask you to make sure the microphone is nice and close to your mouth?
I'm testifying today on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, and the Minnesota Inter-County Association. I'll focus on four specific provisions within the bill that are of importance to counties and the important support work we do to promote individual self-sufficiency. I'd like to thank Chair Pinto for including and Representative Knorr for carrying the original bill. Provisions to simplify our economic assistance programs in meaningful ways, such as moving to six-month reporting and prospective budgeting, removing non-recurring income from income calculations, and simplifying cash assistance by serving all families through the Minnesota Family Investment Program rather than the Diversionary Work Program. Updating and simplifying these processes has the potential to mitigate crises for families who have lost jobs and instead allows us to calculate benefits on a family's forward-looking situation. These changes also allow county staff to reduce paperwork and administrative time so that time can be spent on direct work with families to achieve better outcomes. I'd like to recognize ongoing work with Chair Pinto and DHS as we look at the true fiscal impacts of repealing DWP. Second, thank you for including in the bill permanent reprioritization of basic sliding fee childcare. This proposal simplifies BSF childcare for both county staff and families who apply, helping county staff get benefits to families more quickly rather than partake in an administratively burdensome process that delays childcare for families who need it. Third, I'd like to encourage Chair Pinto and the committee to include provisions carried by Representative Norris that would open a pilot program for counties to provide in-house training and technical assistance programs. You've heard from my colleague from Anoka County and previous committees how this initiative has the potential to fill current gaps and wait lists for training, alleviate DHS staff training loads, and open up additional collaboration and training opportunities between counties. Again, I want to acknowledge ongoing work with the department on this issue, but counties feel this could be very beneficial to meeting the training backlog that DHS has been unable to address with the current staffing. Finally, I encourage the committee to fully fund the cost of DHS's contract for the work number, an electronic eligibility verification tool, which is only partially funded in the governor's proposed budget and absent from the current bill. Most large private employers use third-party vendors to provide employment and wage verifications. Counties rely on timely, accurate information from these third-party vendors to determine eligibility for income-based public assistance programs.
I'll need to have you wrap up.
Chair Norris' unwinding bill, House File 2286, originally funded the cost for the work number at the cost of $2.5 million per year.
Thank you. I will have to have you wrap up.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. After Claire Sanford in the room, Becky Foss will be the next person online. Please identify yourself, Ms. Sanford. Proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Claire Sanford. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Child Care Association and our child care center providers and the families and children they serve statewide. I am here to say thank you for so many pieces of this bill. We are incredibly excited about the investments in early learning scholarships and in CCAP, maybe finally getting out of the wilderness on CCAP rates after 20 years, fingers crossed, and the policy changes such as the reprioritization of the wait list and the move to make early learning scholarships fully eligible for children birth to five are wonderful. I echo concerns already raised about the child care retention payment program and would love to see more funding found for that. Someone mentioned a second bite at the apple earlier. Well, if that apple's on the table, we'll go for that too. We know we can't go backwards on compensation for our early educators. Ms. Davis mentioned earlier the incredible difficulty of attracting and retaining early educators. When your grandson makes more at Jimmy John's, it's really hard to put in the time and the effort and the education needed for this field. So, I mean, last week, Rep. Hudson, we hosted out at a child care center after about 30 minutes of sleep after a marathon house session. So thank you to everyone who participated in that. But, you know, something we talked about there was that at that one center, we could serve 50 children tomorrow, additional children who are on waiting lists, whose families have already said they want to come, if only we had the early educators to do it. And compensation is a huge piece of that. And investments like the retention program would allow us to help support that without passing those costs on to parents. And finally, Article 7, the big vision, the more coherent system, the taking recommendations from the Great Start Task Force and moving on the Great Start scholarships, workforce investments and policy changes, the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and IT investments, finally, are wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. After the next online testifier, we will have Deborah Fitzpatrick. But next, Becky Frost is up next, so please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Becky Frost. I'm the Director of Pine County Health and Human Services. It is an absolute honor and privilege to be here today testifying on behalf of Pine County and MACSA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Services Administrators. And I'm here to express our support for the provisions in House File 2910, which dedicates funding for community resource centers, sometimes called family resource centers or community hubs. We are incredibly grateful and thankful for the funding proposed in the omnibus bill and encourage restoring the funding amount to what was proposed in the governor's budget. Pine County, with short-term financial support from a philanthropic organization, is in the process of developing our own local family resource center, and we are so excited for this opportunity. We chose to implement an FRC after extensive research, specifically based on the experience of Scott County and 37 other states across our great nation, which had similar programs and were noticeably experiencing reductions in child maltreatment reports, reductions in out-of-home placements, reductions in child welfare disparities, and increased student academic performance. FRCs help strengthen families. Parents, children, grandchildren, grandparents, everybody feels supported and honored. With the FRC as our model, we seek to move services and support to the community in one location, making it easier for whole families to access services instead of needing to go to multiple locations. Our community has expressed excitement and enthusiasm for this work, which is so exciting for me. We have received multiple offers of in-kind contributions, including services and space. Funding from the state would sustain this work and help us shift from a system of crisis-oriented support and intervention to one that embraces community-driven programming to help strengthen families in a proactive manner. In closing, on behalf of MACSA, I encourage your support of and increased funding for the CRC provisions in House File 2910. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. The next online testifier is going to be Susie Narrison, so you can get ready. But first, Deborah Fitzpatrick, identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Pinto, members of the committee. My name is Deborah Fitzpatrick, and I'm the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 238. With 2 minutes, it's impossible to cover everything that's amazing about this bill, but Commissioner Harfstead did an admirable job of trying. But so I'm going to lift up two quick points. First of all, we want to start by expressing our appreciation for the unprecedented new investments in child care and early education within Articles 1 and 9, including family, friend, and neighbor care. These investments represent a significant down payment on the more coherent, coordinated, and adequately funded system that is needed to get every child off to the best start possible. Also want to echo some of the comments that were made earlier about our critical workforce, the women, disproportionately women of color, that make this system go and the need to invest in them. And if we can do more on those retention payments, we'd appreciate that as well. As a member of the Great Start Task Force, we are especially excited to see the provisions included in Article 7. The new department, combined with a directive to create the new Great Start Scholarship Program and significant IT investments, create a pathway to achieving the Great Start Task Force vision of affordability for parents, quality for kids, and living wages for providers. Finally, we'd like to lift up on behalf of the 43,000 Minnesota kids located in every legislative district across the state supported by the Minnesota Family Investment Program, we'd like to express our gratitude for the many program improvements included in Article 5. CDF Minnesota works with community partners to help families access critical work support programs and create more efficient and effective programs for families. By reducing red tape and providing more reliable income support, our experience suggests that House File 238 will give children on MFIP a stronger foundation that prepares them to grow, learn, and succeed. These provisions will help propel more of our most overburdened and under-resourced families to economic security and improve economic and home stability for tens of thousands of Minnesota children.
We'll have to have you wrap up here.
Thank you for your hard work. It will no doubt advance our shared goal of creating a state where every child thrives.
Thank you so much. The next person in the room is going to be Beth Holger, but first, Susie Narrison online. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Susie Narrison, and I'm the Human Services Director in Fremont County. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm testifying on behalf of MACSA, an association of human service leaders from across the 87 counties in Minnesota. Thank you to Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Keeler for investments included in House File 2910 related to the Family First Prevention Services Act, or FFPSA, specifically in the areas of the Qualified Individual and Kinship Navigation Programs and Prevention Services. I've been working in the field of child safety for 22 years, and I have seen both devastating and incredible outcomes for families. The difference has been working in partnership with parents, increased level of family and community engagement, and the ability to provide targeted supports to strengthen families, all enhanced by prevention services. Implementing new and effective prevention services for all families in Minnesota, regardless of where they live, will require increased investments at the local level. Building the necessary infrastructure for implementation and sustainability of new programs at the local level will be monumental, requiring county agencies working with multidisciplinary teams to assess existing capacity and available resources, and in determining additional needs within each community across Minnesota. It will require local investments in staff, comprehensive training, and robust collaboration with community partners, including our hospitals and clinics, mental health providers, and our education colleagues. Additional investments are critical to implement prevention services. I encourage members to restore the investment to the governor's budget recommendation and to increase the function allocation rate, funding that addresses local needs to create meaningful change for children and families. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person online is going to be Brenda Carlson, so you can get ready. But first, Beth Holger, please identify yourself. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and members of the committee. My name is Beth Holger, and I'm the CEO of The Link, and I'm also here representing our wonderful statewide grantees, also for Safe Harbor and the Youth Services Network. It goes without saying that no child in our state, or any state for that matter, should be sexually abused or bought and sold for sex for somebody else's profit, but it happens all the time around the clock in our state. In fact, this week and last week, and as we sit here today, some of the survivors of trafficking that we work with at The Link are doing a very incredibly brave but hard thing to do, facing their sex trafficker in federal court and testifying against him in the hopes that justice will be served and that he doesn't have the chance to traffic any more minor girls. Also, as we sit here today, there are so many other young people who are out there being sex trafficked that still need our help. On behalf of these incredible youth, we are asking for an increase of $20 million more per year for our Safe Harbor Law and No Wrong Door response. This funding would help us to sustain, expand our street outreach, which helps to identify and find victims of sex trafficking. It would help us to sustain and expand our regional navigator program, which provides really critical things such as a 24/7 crisis line where youth trafficking victims can text and call for help. It also provides education, awareness, and training across all kinds of systems and community partners in the region. It would also provide the opportunity for our state to expand in two key areas where there's an increase of trafficking victims, even above the normal areas, unfortunately to say, which is Northwest Minnesota and the Twin Cities metro area. It would also allow us to increase and strengthen our emergency shelter and housing programs, providing a safe place for these youth to escape from sex trafficking, heal, and become empowered to achieve their goals. Besides being the right thing to do for these youth, we also know it's a good fiscal decision. There was a study done by Dr. Martin at the University of Minnesota that found that for every dollar the state invests, there's a $34 return on investment. And with that, I just want to say these youth are amazing, inspiring, incredible, and we just thank you so much for your support for victims, survivors of sex trafficking.
Thanks for your testimony and your work. The next person in the room is going to be Melanie Young, but first, Brenda Carlson is online. Brenda Carlson.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Carlson, and I supervise Children's Mental Health, the Family School Support Worker, and Parent Support Outreach Programs in Carlton County. I have worked for Carlton County Health and Human Services for 36 years as both a social worker and social services supervisor. I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. I thank Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Keeler for the investments in House File 2910, related to the Families First Prevention Services Act, specifically the areas of the Qualified Individual Program, Kinship Navigation Program, and most importantly, Prevention Services. Implementing prevention services across all 87 counties and tribes will require sustained and increased investments at the local level. In order for FFPSA to accomplish our collective goal of preventing out-of-home placement, it is essential that all families have equitable access to prevention services in all 87 counties and tribal partners across the state. We need to increase investments in order to build and sustain these services to improve outcomes for children and their families. Our goal is to safely keep children in their home and strengthen families. Similar to when the Parent Support Outreach Program started, counties, tribes, and local partners like public health and schools will need to collaborate to make implementation of Families First Prevention Services a success. The local implementation will be intense and will require not only training but retraining of staff and more rigorous fidelity monitoring. While we make staffing investments at the state, counties and tribes will make similar adjustments, which can be a challenge for small and rural counties. I encourage members to restore the investment to the governor's budget recommendation and increase the function allocation rate, funding that addresses local needs so that we may continue our work to strengthen families in Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you. The next testifier online is going to be Dr. Jordan Unison Chisty. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. But first, Melanie Young, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair members and members of the committee. My name is Melanie Young, and I've been with the LINC for about 2 or 3 years now, and they've helped me with a lot in those 2 or 3 years, mentally and emotionally. I had a point in my life where I was thinking about dropping out of high school, and they helped me keep going with that. And now this year I'll be graduating high school with honors and my diploma. So I feel that the state should support homeless and exploited youth because we are the future. We are the next people to be sitting in those chairs that you're sitting in. I know I am. So support us and give us all the money. thank you guys for the support, and thank you guys for everything you have done for us for the past few years to get our organization to where it is now. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony, and you are the future, and absolutely, you're going to be one of these seats and beyond. Melanie Young, oh my
Ms.
goodness.
Representative yeah. Keeler had been wanting me to say that since the last meeting, so I knew that would make her give it.
I see how that is. Okay, I got it. All right, thank you so much.
Threw you under the bus, Representative.
Glad to have you. Yeah, come and keep coming back. Remember, this is your house. You belong here. Thanks for being here. So we've got so the next person in the room is going to be Annie Shapiro. But first, Dr. Jordan Unison Chisty, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi,
Yeah, good morning, Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Jordan Unison-Chisty, and I'm the Executive Director of Lifehouse located in Duluth. For over 32 years, Lifehouse has been working with homeless and streetwise youth ages 14 to 24 throughout the Northeast region and beyond. We are their primary access point for homeless youth, for homeless young people trying to obtain housing and supportive services. We provide comprehensive supportive services at no cost. We operate the only drop-in youth center in our area, provide mental health and wellness support. We have 50 units of housing in the community, including an emergency youth shelter. We support young people with their education and on-site employment so they can learn job skills. And we also support survivors of sexual exploitation and human trafficking, which is connected to the safe harbor efforts within the state. Lifehouse is a data-driven organization. In 2022, we know that 868 of the young people accessing our supported services, 60% were indigenous, black, and or multiracial, 38% identified as LGBTQ+, 57% experienced some form of abuse, and 43% are struggling with mental health concerns. My staff of over 40 people are these young people's trustworthy adults in their lives. We're their family. Please support the amended version to House File 238, which provides critical life-saving support services to homeless youth and young families in our community. These funds assist us with interrupting the cycles of housing instability and a legacy of poverty for young people that young people are facing. We are grateful for all your efforts and opportunity to provide under-resourced young adults an opportunity to partake in a pilot project which can drastically impact their lives. Most young people who access our, and we just want to give a special thanks to Representative Keeler and Representative Kowalski for championing that pilot project in our state. Most young people who access our supportive services are with us for 5, 8, or 10 years.
I have to have you wrap, team of people wrap up, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Are engaged in the healing process. So, Mr. Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and members of the community, please support the Pathway Home Act and the amended version of 238. Thank you for time, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I appreciate your commitment for supporting our young people and our communities.
Thank you. The next person online is going to be Laura Birnbaum, but first, Annie Shapiro. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Annie Shapiro, and I'm the policy co-chair for the Homes for All Coalition. Homes for All is a statewide coalition of over 270 housing-related organizations, some of which you've heard from already today. And we represent the full continuum of housing, from services for people experiencing homelessness to affordable homeownership. And I'm here today to share our strong support for Article 6 of House File 238 as amended. You've already heard many of the details and will continue to hear the details of that article, so I'm not going to get into those provisions. Instead, what I want to say is we know that people experiencing homelessness and housing instability also often are food insecure, also may receive MFIP, also need affordable child care, and we really appreciate that this bill addresses all of those pieces, but those need to be made in conjunction and in collaboration with long overdue and critical investments in homelessness services. And so we appreciate that this bill makes those in Article 6, and we want to ensure that those stay throughout this process. And I want to especially thank Representative Keeler for championing and carrying the Pathway Home Act, House File 444. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And next, after the online testifier, the next person in the room is going to be Rhonda Otteson. But Laura Birnbaum, please proceed.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Laura Birnbaum, and I work for St. Louis County Public Health and Human Services, supervising our Housing and Homelessness Programs team. Thank you, Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and members of the committee for including the items that are in the amended version of House File 238, specifically the Pathway Homes Act funding for shelter capital, emergency services program grants, homeless youth grants, transitional housing programs, and the homeless youth pilot project. We need it all, and here is why. Last year in northern St. Louis County, 278 people were served through the limited shelter units we have, 40 who were fleeing domestic violence, but 884 individuals were turned away from shelter due to it being full. Last year in Duluth, CHUM Shelter served 1,687 people in Congregate Family Shelter and our Warming Center. This is a 44% increase in the number of people served in just 2 years. At this very moment, 1,028 people are unhoused and waiting on our St. Louis County Coordinated Entry Priority List. We know that young adults ages 18 to 24 are overrepresented when it comes to facing homelessness. And on this list today, there are 164 people ages 18 to 24 who are unhoused in St. Louis County. This includes 123 single young people and 41 families, of which 14 are pregnant. We can easily get lost in all of these numbers, so I do think it's important to pause and remember that this could be me, this could be my son, this could be you. The number of people who are unhoused in our coordinated entry system is not decreasing despite active efforts to expand shelter, permanent supportive housing, and services. We desperately need more infrastructure and resources. Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and members of the committee, thank you so much for your tireless work, and special thanks to Representative Kozlowski as well. Please support House File 238 as amended. This is an amazing opportunity for you, for Minnesota, to champion and lead in ending homelessness in our state. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The final online testifier is going to be Jason Arbanzik, so be ready for that. But first, Rhonda Addison, welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, Vice Chair Keeler, and committee members. My name is Rhonda Addison, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, and I live in Willmar. We are a statewide organization of over 70 member organizations across the state, and we have deep partnerships with people with lived experience of homelessness and housing instability. Each year, we partner with those lived experience leaders and community organizations to listen, learn, and work together to advance the solutions, policy, and funding priorities needed to prevent and end homelessness here in Minnesota. This bill will finally make the investments that have been identified in this process to enhance and create shelter, fund the Emergency Services Program, Transitional Housing, the Homeless Youth Act, and Safe Harbor. So many of the elements that were so key in the Pathway Home Act, which was passed out of the House about a month ago. I want to call your attention to two letters in your packet. The first is our quotes from people with lived experience. We gathered those quotes within 24 hours, and over 40 people responded about what that would mean to them and to their community. And secondly, a very fast sign-on letter, again within 24 hours, about over 80 organizations across the state in support of these funding measures to address homelessness. As a person who experienced homelessness as a child and extreme housing instability, moving over 13 times as a child, I want to express my deep appreciation for investing in the solutions needed to address homelessness across the state, in small towns and regional centers, in the metro area, in tribal lands. Finally, thank you for seeing, for hearing and listening, and more importantly, acting and hearing those stories. Action speaks louder than words, and when we see these budget priorities in this bill, it means that you've heard this. So thank you very much.
And thanks to you. And thanks to you, Ms. Addison. The final person in the room is going to be Katie Williams, but first, Jason Urbanczyk online. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jason Urbanczyk. I'm a member of the Regional Expert Network from Moorhead. I'd like to thank Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Keeler and members of the committee for your dedication towards the fight to end homelessness and caring and supporting the Pathway Home. I was homeless and addict for the majority of my adult life. In 3 days, I will have been clean and sober for 53 months and housed for 47 of them. I'm now an active leader and peer mentor in the Moorhead region. In November of 2018, I wandered to a homeless shelter in Moorhead, Minnesota in hopes of breaking my cycle of homelessness.
Can you get just a little bit closer to the mic? I'm having a little bit of trouble.
Yes. Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, it is better. Yeah, just make sure you get nice and close and yeah. Go for it.
Little did I know I would be there until March of 2019, just waiting to meet my caseworker for the first time. It took 4.5 months for my first contact with any case manager. During that time, I was just told to wait. It sounds easy, right? Not so much when you're battling mental health illness and trying to maintain your sobriety in a place not meant to or equipped to provide the types of services needed. It's almost impossible. Thanks to my resilience and motivation, I'm standing here today. Once I was assigned and working with my caseworker, which, remind you, I said took 4.5 months to meet, I was moving to my apartment in just under 2 weeks. The Pathway Home Act will not only provide desperately needed funding for case managers and programs, it will also save money and wasted resources. Most of all, it will save lives. By including this in your budget, it will provide the necessary programs and shelter space to set people up for success and lead them on a path to their own home. This bill will replace chaos with stability and allow others experiencing homelessness to have hope and the ability to become leaders in their communities. Thank you again for including the Pathway Home Act in your budget. While doing listening sessions in Moorhead Region with the goal of creating legislative solutions for ending homelessness, many of the items in this bill are what I heard. As someone with lived experience, I want to say thanks for listening to us and including it in your budget. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us. Congratulations to you on your sobriety and for all that you've achieved. I'm glad to have you with us today. And so then our final testifier is Katie Williams, and please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. I'm Katie Williams. I'm a retired child care center director, and I am here on behalf of Elders for Infants. We are thrilled and excited about the many wonderful provisions and investments in HF 238 that will improve Minnesota's child care programs and help young children and their families. We commend your work. For me, this is a chance to celebrate after 40 years of advocacy for child care. However, we are concerned about Article 4, Section 42. This proposal would lower the qualifications of child care center staff and endanger the children in their care. The proposed amendments to Rule 3 would allow centers with more than one class of a given age group to place minimally experienced and completely untrained employees alone in charge of a class of young children, infants through preschool. Employment for 30 days and an intention to begin a child development associate training program is not enough to ensure the safety and nurture of our young children. A teacher in charge of a child care class must be trained and experienced enough to plan and implement curriculum, conduct all health and safety guidelines, including now lockdown drills, include children with a variety of special needs and communicate with the professionals about those needs, communicate with parents and include parents, identify and find help for children without special needs diagnoses, establish nurturing relationships with each child, handle crises, accidents, and meltdowns, and all of this with compassion and empathy. This is not easy work. It takes training, experience, and depth of knowledge. Please don't sacrifice the quality of the care we provide for Minnesota's children. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Williams, and thanks to the Elders for Infants. Thanks for sharing the testimony. So thanks to all the testifiers. You did. This is amazing work. We were Commissioner Harvested set the bar to keep it on time, and you all did. And so many thanks to you. We do have a little bit of business to accomplish, members. First of all, I want to make sure to highlight, as was referenced by some of the testifiers, there's an extensive packet of letters and input from groups, written input, which can be really valuable. So I want to direct members' attention to that, members of the public as well. Quite a few letters and sets of comments, so please do check that out. Secondly, I wanted to make sure to move, and then close up, I guess, about this bill. So amendments to HF 238 as amended are due at 3 p.m. today. And so members, you want to get moving on those very, very quickly and send them in to Ms. Colburn if you have any of those. The next meeting is going to be tomorrow. We'll be considering those and voting the bill out. If we don't finish tomorrow morning, then we will be coming back tomorrow evening for the work at 6:30 p.m. I'm hopeful that we will be done in the morning, but just to advise folks of that. I'd also, since we have the minutes in front of us and we do now have a quorum, I'll ask Vice Chair Keeler if she's willing to move approval of the minutes from March 28th.
So moved.
Thank you. Members, there are additions or corrections to those minutes? And hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes from March 28th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. So that motion passes. Our minutes are approved. And so I just want to make sure there's nothing else to address here. Are there questions about the process or anything from anybody? Not seeing any, so we're ending a few minutes early. Thanks so much again to the testifiers, and we are all set. So thank you so much, and with that, meeting is adjourned.